Welcome to Days in the Wild. I just want to talk to you real quick before we jump into this next episode. I can't urge you enough to get out there and give us a review on iTunes or the Podbean app. It's super important. Helps me keep this free, helps me reach new people and continue to grow. If you don't know how to do that, hit me up and I'll help you through it. Also want you to go and give Phoenix Shooting Bags a look. Check out their website, phoenixshootingbags.com. They are our main sponsor and they put an excellent product out, and it means a lot for me for you to go check them out and take a look and see what they got. So without further ado, let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast. Today, I'm catching up with my buddy, Ron Nixon, Broadhead Nation. If you're not part of it, check it out on Facebook and Instagram. So, Ronnie, first off, how you doing anyway?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
With all this crazy shit, man.
Yeah. Fortunately for me, my job was defined as essential, both in real estate and in construction. So, because I work for a new home builder. So my job's kind of double essential. I've never stopped working. That's actually worked out pretty well for me. I've covered days off for people and time off that people wanted to get away from the office, and they're afraid of COVID and afraid of all this stuff. And so there was people that ended up losing their jobs or quit their jobs. Oh, wow. And I got to pop into their spot as I was selling out my community. So it's actually...
Gotcha.
I don't know, kind of turned into a little positive for me here and there, so...
Yeah, I wouldn't say for me it turned into a positive, but it wasn't as affected as I thought it was. Because in the beginning, so...
Well, in the beginning, you were stuck in Argentina.
Well, so. that yes. But when we got back, especially when they when Ducey shut down all the pools.
Right.
And I was like, oh, fuck. All right. So that's going to hurt. You know, that's my main business. It's a service. You know, right. We do construction, but the construction side's, in comparison to my service side, it's small. So when he shut that down, I had two of my large contracts put me on hold.
Oh, geez.
And that was like 25-30% of my gross monthly income.
Ouch.
Those two contracts, which also made me start thinking, wow, what a glass house I have built right now, because if those go away, I'm kind of fucked, you know. But so they put me on hold and I was like, oh crap, that's gonna hurt. And you know, I started looking into the PPP and all that stuff because I wanted to keep my guys. Two of the guys that work on that, that's a large chunk of their change too.
Sure, absolutely.
They're weekly. So, you know, I already had made it in my head. I'm like, all right, if it's like 2 months, whatever, I'll be fine. I'm just gonna continue to pay them, and you know, I don't want to lose these guys. So anyway, long story short, all these properties started that were closed just said, oh yeah, we're closed. We're going to take advantage of the fact that we're closed and remodel. So I just got a bunch of remodels.
Wow.
That basically end up covering what I wasn't making in chemicals and I wasn't making off those contracts.
Sure, in labor and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I end up, you know, breaking even basically.
Good.
So I was fine, you know.
Good.
I thank God. Knock on wood.
You were more diversified in your income streams than you even thought.
Yeah,
exactly. That's awesome. Good.
So anyway, I the other day you posed an interesting question,
yeah,
on Broadhead Nation,
yeah,
and I was like, I wanted to jump on there and I really wanted to like
take over
and say I got a lot to say about that, because
yeah,
I've always been a big proponent of control the things that you can for as long as you can.
Right.
Because everything in hunting is uncontrollable.
Right.
And go ahead.
Well, the question I posed was, for anyone listening that didn't see it, was if you could improve one aspect of your bow hunting that you're actually in control of, what would it be? And there was a litany of responses, you know, and the main response we got was, you know, the stalk, the approach, the final 20 yards, the final 50 yards, or whatever, which was fine. There's a few guys that I would ban all mechanical broadheads. Well, you're not in control of that.
No.
You know, and how does that affect your personal bow hunting? Whether somebody's using a mechanical broadhead 800 yards from you or not. I mean, what?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, the fact that they're 800 yards from you and you're in control of the fact that you should have a backup spot.
Yep.
That you're in control of. Who cares if he's using a mechanical broadhead? So, yeah. So that was the question I posed. It was, I've just been thinking about, you know, different conversation topics, and it's one of the things I wish, or that I think I need to work on, is my approach. Mm-hmm. It's not even the stock. It's not the last 50 yards. It's not the last 80 yards. It's the first 700 yards. It's instead of going...
Coming up with the plan.
Yeah, it's the plan. It's looking at the wind. And, of course, my biggest issue is I hunt almost exclusively by myself. Mm-hmm. I never have anyone on the radio. I never have anybody texting me, giving me directions. So, for me, it's always I try to keep my eye on where the deer are or where they were and stay low. And I always end up going kind of up the gut, mm-hmm. kind of straight up the middle, try and find a cut, trying to find a little valley, little creek bed or something like that to go up and try and sneak up there as quiet as possible, which being by myself, I feel like that's almost my only play. Mm-hmm. So I can keep my eyes on where they were or where they were headed. And I can peek up and see, okay, they're still there, get back down. Whereas if you were with somebody else, the idea is to take the long trip all the way around the mountain and come up the backside of them, or the long way around the hill.
Whatever the best approach is.
Yeah. Which I feel like I would like to make that approach, mm-hmm. but I would lose sight of the deer so much, especially if they weren't quite bedded down or whatever. And I guess maybe that's something I should control. Maybe I need to not be so excited to rush into the stock, watch them and see if they bed down. If they bed down, then I have a better opportunity.
Well, it depends on what time of year you're hunting. So if you're talking about hunting here in Arizona during the rut, bedding down doesn't mean shit. I can't tell you how many times they bed down and like 5 minutes later they'll get up like, ooh, squirrel, there's a hot doe down.
Yeah.
I just caught a whiff, you know, 100 yards away, whatever.
Or, hey, here's a little button buck that came by and he's going to chase my girls. So
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's very dependent on the time of year. But also, you're not the only person that has that problem. Like, you're not the only person that has that or is posed with that situation when they're hunting by themselves. Like, how do I get from here to there undetected, have the best route possible, and still know where the hell I'm going?
Sure.
You come here in the desert, you drop down into the bottom, you're like, oh, where the fuck am I?
Right.
Like, there's no real landmarks. You know, you can get creative. So some of the things that I've done, especially since the wave of technology that has come through our industry in the last, you know, 15 years or so, if I'm sitting up on a point and I'm glassing down, let's say down in the flats, that's the hardest in my opinion. Because if they're up on a ridge, you got the ridge to give you markers.
Okay? Right.
But if you're up on top and you're looking down in the flats, let's say you're hunting mule deer and you're hunting, that's the hardest situation because how do you know? So what I've always done is I take my phone, I push the button where it shows you the direction, right?
Right.
And then I aim the direction at where I'm going. Okay. And I take my range finder and I range as far as I can to, or hopefully the animal even.
Right.
Okay. I draw a line on my Onyx maps.
Oh, there you go.
100, you know, whatever, 700 yards. Okay. It's
kind of old fashioned Boy Scout compass azimuth on a map, but of course, digitally on a device.
And here's the best part about it is you drop a point right where you think they are. Once you find about the area, you zoom in as best you can. Now, Onyx doesn't have the best imagery, so you can switch over to Google if you need to,
right,
or something like that has a little bit better energy. Even the if you're using an iPhone, the iPhone Maps is actually great because you could drop a pin and the imagery is really good.
Right.
So you can pick out a rocket cropping, you can pick out a giant saguaro cactus or whatever possibly. Drop that pin. Now you don't have to go right up the gut. Now you could take the long way around and get and navigate yourself to that point using the wind, using the cover, blah, blah, blah. I've found that works amazing. Now, if you know, you don't have those resources, whatever.
Or if you're in an area with no cell signal, you didn't download the map.
Exactly. There's a lot, you know, there's ways around it. But I take a picture with my phone. I take a picture through my spotting scope or my binos of vegetation or, you know, things that I know that I could recognize once I'm down there. If you know, it's not super recognizable. I'll take increments. Like, I know I want to go to that spot. I want to go to that spot. I want to go to that spot. And I dissect it in smaller sections, so it's easier for my brain to comprehend to get there.
Makes sense.
So those are some of the things you can do. Now, as far as control, like going back to your initial question, this is not something that you can control.
Right.
Nothing about this situation is controllable, except for the fact that you know now you have these tools. It's not a controllable situation, but you have these tools that can aid you in being successful.
Sure.
You know, in my opinion, the things that you can control are your bow tune,
sure,
your arrows, the equipment that you use,
your preparation.
Yep. Like, you want to, like, how do you practice? What's your practice when you shoot?
When I shoot, it's in the backyard. I'm fortunate to have a pretty good sized backyard. So a lot of people like to warm up at 25 yards or 20 yards and everything. And my warm up shots are 50 yards.
Right.
I warm up at 50 and I work my way back from there, and I'll work my way forward. I'll set up a 3D target. I'll work different angles. Mm-hmm. But yeah, usually my warm up shot is sitting in a chair on my back patio, mm-hmm, a sit down shot, because it's well known, I sit a lot of ground blinds.
Okay. Perfect.
And my warm up is sitting down, drawing cold, sit down, no stretching, no nothing, just draw back and shoot from 45, 50 yards.
Right.
And right in the bag. And that's half dozen arrows before I even do anything else.
So I'm not a firm believer of warm up at all.
I mean, either.
I did a video called Effective Range.
Right.
Your Effective Range.
Absolutely.
You remember that?
Yep.
Okay. So in my opinion, if you have an 80-yard pin,
right,
you need to be able to walk out to 80 yards.
At any given time.
At any given time, first cold shot on a 3D target, not something that has a dot.
Sure.
3D target. And draw back in any position, standing, sitting, kneeling, whatever, okay, and make a perfect shot. Because if you can't do that, then you're not an 80-yard shooter.
You're not an 80-yard shooter, exactly.
You're not. Yeah. And the yardage that you can do that at without having a practice shot, that's your effective range.
Sure. No, it makes perfect
sense. Simple as that.
Makes perfect sense.
There you go. Oh, I can shoot 150 yards. Okay, great. Don't take a practice shot at 30 yards.
Let's start at 150.
Go start at 150. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. If you can't do that, then don't. And there's been years where I haven't had the time to spend. And if I do that before season, I go out and I walk out to 80 yards and I shank it, I'm not shooting 80 yards.
Right.
Because I only shoot as far as I'm confident. Now, I mean, there's been years that I've been practiced out to 150 and I could, you know, do a freaking blindfolded too,
right,
but I'm not going to take a 150 shot. Your shot. I always try to limit myself. I've been known to take a couple long ones, but
it's actually funny because it wasn't this last January, it was January before. We're out, you know, we're desert mule deer hunting in the rut, and I'm out with my buddy, and he has a little block target, mm-hmm, and it's the five spots, you know, center and then the four spots. And, we put a couple stock on some deer and screw up a couple stocks, and it's about, you know, 11:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, deer are starting to be a little more sparse, a little harder to find.
Right.
We move spots, get to a new spot, and he says, hey, let's shoot real quick before we get on the glass. I said, okay, sounds good. And so he grabs a block target out of the back of his truck and he walks out 100 yards. I'm like, I like this. And he pulls his bow back and he, you know, dials his little dialer in and puts his bottom pin on there, and we put $20 bill on the ground each.
Nice.
I said, first one to hit. And I said, I'll even give you first shot. So he does. He draws back. And this guy's, he's a pretty capable hunter. Mm-hmm. Draws back into the sand.
Oh, shit.
I draw back, top left spot, 100 yards. He goes, that was luck. He draws back, makes a little adjustment on his sight, draws back, airmails it. I draw back, top right spot. So I go 4 for 4, hit all four dots at 100 yards, and he ends up putting one in the middle on his fourth shot. Obviously, I picked up his $20 bill.
Right.
But it just goes to show. And that was, we didn't draw back our bows at all that morning.
Right.
You know, we started it walking into an area at 4 o'clock in the morning. We had been up 8, 9 hours at that point in time. It's the drive time and everything. So it just goes to show where you are now. Right now, I wouldn't even dream of doing that.
Yeah.
I just haven't been shooting enough.
I haven't been shooting at the 100 in a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, 40 yards in my backyard is what I've been shooting lately, just getting ready to go to my next hunt. So
I've been shooting out to 80 consistently.
Oh, have you?
A couple, yeah, 2-3 times a week, but not 100.
Right.
You know, I haven't been shooting out there, and I don't think I'm.
You're fortunate that you're close enough to an area where you can do it real quick.
Yeah, I'm. You know, ten minutes.
I could shoot 100 yards in my backyard, but the golfers and the golf course might be unhappy about it.
So. Yeah, that's probably not a good thing.
Jump the fence. Hey, I'm just gonna pick up my bag real quick.
There you go. I have a canal behind my house,
right.
And I used to shoot there until I launched. I basically skipped the arrow off the top of the bag.
Oh,
wow. I pulled a shot, and I wasn't shooting far either. It just happened to be one of those, you know, got away from me, top tail, skipped it, and it went flying over the wall into our neighbor's yard and shot his outdoor refrigerator.
Oh, no.
This guy lit me up. He's like, my kid plays out here. You think this is... I'm like, oh, I'm never fucking doing this
right,
again. This
right.
is like... Yeah, he's so right, because, like, God forbid, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so now I restrict my shooting.
I had to change the angle of how I shoot because somebody jumped my case because from my back patio to the back corner there, mm-hmm. is that warm up 45, 50 yards. It's actually angled right towards the fence.
Okay.
And if I'm a little left, then it's going to go through the view fence into the golf course.
Yeah, yeah.
And the tee box is right there. So I actually had to kind of change my approach. I had to move the bags over a little bit.
Gotcha.
People were sensitive. So.
Yeah. No, yeah, and rightly so.
I haven't airmailed anything yet. Knock on wood. So
that extra pressure makes it, believe it or not, it's like that's one of the things. So one of the things that I've been a big proponent of for many, many years. I mean, if you go back to, I got videos on YouTube from 11 years ago talking about practicing for the game.
Right.
Okay. I used to do seminars for whitetail hunting, or these guys, and they practice, and, you know, whitetail hunting, you're usually in a tree stand, right?
Sure.
You're dealing with crazy angles.
Right.
And these guys were, you know, they practiced 20 yards standing, perfect archer's tee,
yep.
in front of a, you know, a bag with a dot on it, not even shooting a 3D or whatever. And I was like, listen, you want to be successful, you got to put a 3D target, you got to get up in the tree stand, and you got to move that thing around. And
agreed.
I was doing the same.
Or get a ladder out and stand on your back patio or
whatever.
Something.
I used to shoot off my roof. There's no trees in here in freaking Arizona.
Absolutely.
So when I used to travel to like the Midwest to go shoot, you know, whitetail, I had to do something.
Right.
Like, for instance, like my Ibex hunt, you know, the first one, especially the training that I did for that, like I was going every day, I was shooting down cliffs, I was, you know, doing all this stuff. And then, yeah, I knew guys that had the tag also, and they were like, oh yeah, I'm shooting out to 100 yards because I know it's going to be a long shot, blah, 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 blah. Nothing, I mean, I had long shots, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't the long, you know, it was the literally, like one of the shots that I made, this is the second time I had the tag. One of the shots that I took, I actually had the opportunity to take it three times.
Wow.
And there were some things weren't going right. Like I wasn't thinking until the last shot when I shot. And I'm like as soon as I let it go, I was like, I knew I had made the mistake. So there was an ibex below me standing on a rock, like on a pinnacle. It was like, you know, perched like that type deal, you know?
King of the mountain.
Exactly. And I was way above him. The line of sight was like 95 yards.
Right.
But the holdover was 30 or 32.
Because of the angle. And that's so deceiving.
It's nuts.
It's so hard.
Because it's a small target.
Right.
You know, you are that far away. Like line of sight, you are that far. So it's you know, it's going to be the size of a deer or whatever, or ibex at this point.
Ibex even smaller, right.
Yeah, at 100 yards, you know. So, that you know, it's going to get smaller. And, you know, it just doesn't feel natural. And the positioning and all that other stuff anyway. So I had the angles, I had the right yardage and all that stuff, but I shot and the arrow right below, you know, the vitals once. He jumped off the rock. Another one jumps up on top there.
Holy
Same
cow.
Spot. Same thing. I thought I just pulled the shot. Boom, shoot again. Same spot. And I'm like, fuck, what the hell am I doing wrong? And it was so windy that day.
Right.
And the wind was right in my face. And if you think about
pushing the arrow down.
If you think about the arrow flight is like this, right? And
yeah.
it's pushing against the arrow, pushing it back towards the mountain.
Yeah, makes sense.
Which is down,
right.
basically. at that point.
So never would have thought of that until you just said it. Wind in my face, and as soon as I'm like, holy cow.
I mean, and I'm talking about wind. I'm like 20 right. miles an hour. Right. Not a little bit of wind. So, but anyway, so these are the things that you just don't get this kind of practice. You have to put yourself in as many lifelike scenarios as possible in right. your practice. If you look at football players, you look at soccer players, any high level athlete, they don't practice. When you're a soccer player, you don't practice football.
Right.
You practice a very sport-specific regime, and that's what your mentality's got to be. You can't practice for FIDA and think that that's going to give you all the tools you need
right.
to be able to make a shot on a buck that's 30-degree angle down in a canyon and walking. That just doesn't, it doesn't prepare you. Right. It gives you false confidence.
It's just, when I was in Wisconsin last year, and I was in this Wisconsin whitetail hunt, and, I show up and pull my bow out of the bow case and, off the flight and everything. And first thing I do, go out to the, and they had a little 3D whitetail target, and I go out to 50 yards and I just start shooting
right.
from 50 yards. And boom, boom, boom.
Right.
Guys come out, they go, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
Of course, back east, they don't take long shots. No, I'm like, "Well, look at all those pins you have on your bow. I mean, that's what they're there for."
Right.
He goes, "Well, I guess I can try 30, and that's fine. But he was actually smart enough that he tried 30 and he was hitting the target okay. Mm-hmm. But then actually in the field that evening, he had deer at 36 and 37 yards. He goes, "I watched this deer. It's a 160 class whitetail." He goes, "I watched him for 45 minutes at 37 yards. He just wouldn't come in and break that 30-yard number." Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it going, "God, can't you put that 40-yard pin on his shoulder and just let it fly?"
Right.
He was actually smart enough to go, "I'm not prepared for this situation."
Yeah.
And he made the ethical choice to not do it. So it's, you're right. That's one of those things that you have to control. You have to control your own mindset.
Yep.
I was a huge proponent of walking the mountain course out of Ben Avery.
Oh, yeah.
Because maybe not as much now as I think back about it and I start to reflect on it, because although you're walking the mountain course and you're getting a little bit of exercise and, getting the heart pounding a little bit, most of the shots are just flat. Right. When you get to your standing
point. I don't ever shoot from the – I'm bad.
Yeah.
I'm
well, you got to make sure.
Well, obviously, yeah. You got to make sure. And usually when I go – there's
nobody out there. Yeah.
When there's nobody out there, yeah. We used to play a game. One, we wouldn't range it. This is back when we were, when I almost never shunned the range finders, but
– Right.
And now I would never even think about shooting without one, even though I do it all the time with coyotes. But – we'd walk to a spot, and as soon as you could see the deer or the whatever it was,
the target,
you'd have to shoot from there.
Wow.
And,
of course, if you walk up to the line that says 35 or whatever, yeah, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
14 paces ago, you were 10 feet higher in elevation, mm-hmm. and you could see through the trees, and right. that makes sense.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So now all my practicing, and I shouldn't say all my practicing, but for years and years and years, I shoot in every contorted position you can think of because I'm never, 100% perfect form.
Very rarely.
And I shoot it, I shoot a trigger puncher. I'm a trigger puncher. I shoot a regular finger caliper release,
right.
And the reason why I do that is because, and not always, I mean, God, there's so many guys out there that do it year in, year out with, back tensions and all this other stuff and they're patient. I'm not a patient person.
Right.
Okay. So if I see an opportunity, I'm taking it.
Sure.
I work hard to create opportunities. And if I have an opportunity, I'm going to capitalize on it.
Right.
Simple as that.
Hopefully you're prepared for whatever opportunity
that's what the thing, you need to prepare. You need to get your mindset right. Otherwise, you have to be that guy that said, "Oh, I'm not going to take that 40-yard shot." You have to be disciplined enough to know what your limits are and know that I got to wait for this deer to turn perfect. I got to wait for, me to walk through my whole, shooting process.
Pre-shot routine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Kind of like a golfer. Right.
Exactly. And, for me, I saw coming up, I let so many opportunities go when I used to do that.
Right.
that I was like, I knew I needed to change up my thing. Like, I want to be as automatic as possible, you know, like the pop-up 3D stuff, you know, that was, I used to, oh, that's the greatest thing ever.
That's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, and it kind of gets the wheels turning and lets you know where you're at. Like, you know, things are popping up, things are moving, whatever. I mean, not to say that you're going to take moving shots, you know, sometimes you do.
Right.
You know, I shot elk that, you know, they're walking us very slow, steady pace, and they're 25 yards away. Okay.
And you can lead that and follow through, not a big deal.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, 25 yards, even if you didn't lead through, you'd only be back a couple inches because it's that close and your bows are that fast now. But, you know, it's knowing what you're going to face. So when I go to any hunt, when I'm preparing for any hunt, I look at that hunt. I look at the terrain. I look at the type of animal. And if I don't know about it, I research it to find out about it. And then I create practice sessions that are going to mimic what I might be faced with in the field.
It's actually one of the things that I didn't even get a chance to get into on that conversation on the post was one of the things that I can control is my visualization. Mm-hmm. And especially sitting in a ground blind, you got a lot of time to sit there. Got a lot of time to think, got a lot of time to wait, or a tree stand. I visualize every shot.
Oh yeah.
I visualize every single scenario.
You have to look down every single lane.
And I find myself behind glass looking at a handful of does waiting for a nice buck to show up from around the other side of the hill and going, okay, all right, if a buck comes up and he goes this way, I can cut around this way. And that visualization happens all the time. I think it's one of the things that not only we can control, we absolutely have to control. We have to look at all the scenarios that are coming. Mm-hmm. What angle is this elk going to approach from? How long are they going to put their head down? How long are they going to have their head below water or head below ground, you know, getting a drink of water? How long is that deer going to turn back? Is, you know, there's does back over here. Are they going to turn around and look at it? So, I mean, we got to visualize all that stuff. And it's just like, it's almost like playing make-believe, almost like playing pretend make-believe. Oh, yeah. But at the same time,
you're playing what if.
When I started doing it mm-hmm. is when the things that people think they can't control, I was actually able to control.
Right.
Like my breathing, like my excitement, the buck fever, the shakes. The more I visualize it, the more I expect it.
Right.
The more I can kind of pump myself up for, oh God, this elk's going to come in this way, or this buck's going to come around this way. He's only going to put his head down for about 8 seconds to get a drink of water, and he's going to run off. The more I can visualize that, the more I know I've only got a few seconds to draw back and go.
Right.
So it kind of takes the spookiness out of it for me.
Oh.
And I was horrible buck fever. I was a kid. Holy cow. I'd see a deer 700 yards away and start shaking. It was just, nice. I had a hard time with buck fever for the longest time. And it's something that never goes away completely, obviously. And
right.
If it ever does, you probably should stop hunting.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's something that I think that helps that. So.
Well, for sure. What you just said, I remember on several occasions, and this was predator hunting, that I envisioned lines coming in and how they would come in.
Yep.
And I actually got like the chill up my spine, like as if it walked out. Like, you know, you got to be that like.
You're intensely focusing. All of a sudden a bird lands on the branch next to you and you get the whole shivers all the way through your body.
Exactly. No, but that's huge. Especially when you're stand hunting.
You
have all the time in the world to figure out as many combinations or scenarios as possible. I can't tell you how many times I'm up in a tree and of course you don't want to move around a whole bunch either.
Sure.
But
made that mistake.
Yeah. But you know, look around, make sure there's nothing coming, and then you know, okay, I'm gonna see if I can make a shot to this side or make a shot to this angle or whatever, and draw back and settle in and try to figure that out. I remember, what was it, last year, 2 years ago? 2 years ago when I went back to New York. And I hadn't shot with a recurve. I hadn't shot a deer with a recurve in a long time.
Right.
Actually, I never shot a deer. I should never shot a buck with a recurve. I shot a doe before that and only pigs. So I wasn't used to it. And I didn't practice out of a tree stand because I didn't have the time. Now that I have three kids and da, 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 like it's not as easy for me to say, oh, I'm going to go, you know, take a ride down to the river and go find a tree that's big enough for me to run a tree stand up or whatever. So
you're up in a tree with a big long stick. You're not used to shooting.
Exactly. Exactly. And many times I had deer and I would go to shoot and then the bow would be in the way, like it would be hitting my leg or whatever. And then I'd realize I have to take off all the arrows out of my quiver and put them in my backpack because they were getting in the way and I couldn't keep them on the quiver. And like, so I lost some opportunities because I didn't put myself in those positions. Luckily, I ended up shooting a deer, thank God. But you know, those are going to happen. They're going to happen whether you're shooting trad or you know, compound bow, or whatever. You're going to be put in scenarios and situations that are not matching your practice. And you can never really practice everything, of course. You know, there's an infinite amount of, you know, possibilities of what can happen.
Exactly.
But you can put yourself in enough places that where, you know, if it's a very little variation of this or a little variation of that, you're going to be practiced enough, well enough to make the shot.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
I always know the years that I had lots of time to prepare for hunts and get mentally, I mean, I went in there with the confidence and I executed.
Right.
And then, like, for instance, the last 2 years, so since I had my son, he's four now, the amount of time I've spent practicing those ways are a lot less. I do a lot more of now of what everybody else does is go just shoot my bow at a block target.
Stay shooting. At least you're doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, but I haven't had the time. A lot of it's guilt too, you know, like you feel like you're taken away from the family or whatever. So you're already taking away X amount of days for actually hunting. You got to take away even more days for practicing, more days for scouting, and and sooner or later, it's like there's no days left. But I noticed, last year in Nevada.
It gets better as they get older, by the way. They turn into teenagers, and you don't want to be around them, and they don't want you around, so that's
exactly. Yeah. I'm starting to notice that already with my oldest ones. But yeah, so it's just, you know, and I know, I just, the point is that I know there's a guy who's been successful for many years and I've done very well. If I'm not up to date on my practice and if I'm not staying on it, like it's like anything else, it's perishable. It goes away. Like you're not going to forget how to shoot, but you're not going to have the same confidence and you're not going to have the same abilities that you had.
Exactly.
So it just goes, you're only as good as, you know, what you put into it.
Sure.
The other thing that I thought of right away was, especially since I've been doing all the broadhead testing, I've been doing all the vein testing.
Doing a lot of that stuff.
And the arrow stuff. You know, there's a lot to be said and there's a lot of confidence that can be gained by taking the time and building yourself the most, I'm going to use my air quotes now.
Perfect.
Perfect setup.
And by perfect, we're not saying, oh, you have to use this brand bow and you have to use this brand arrow and these brand fletchings, right?
No, but it has to be.
It's got to be tuned.
It's got to be tuned to you.
Right.
That's the most important. But that, so that's one of the things we've been working on over here. We're in Arizona Archery Club sitting down talking. But one of the things I've been working with them for the last year or so is doing super tunes.
Right.
You know, and these guys have been, you know, gathering all the right equipment, doing all the right stuff, and the super tune. The thing about the super tune, it's not. Yeah, you can go. You could give your bow to a bow tech. He's going to shoot it through paper, shoot a perfect bullet hole, whatever. You're going to give that bow to you. You're probably not going to shoot the same hole that he did.
Right.
You got different body mechanics, so the bow needs to be tuned to you while you're shooting and what you're using, your arrow, your broadhead, your facial contact.
Absolutely.
Facial contact's huge. I didn't realize. I mean, I knew it had an effect, but I didn't realize how much. Because I've made, on purpose, I set up one of my bows where it has no facial contact at all. And I was drawn to here, and I had just the tip of the string. I had put one of those
kisser button things?
It's a kisser button, but what's his name? Makes it Bomar, Josh Bomar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because just to see, oh my God, I shot lights out.
Really?
But in a hunting situation, I know it's not going to be automatic. I'm trained to be the way that I normally shoot.
Right.
Okay. I'm not going to,
it's hard.
40 years later.
It's hard to untrain that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That and I would definitely have to drop poundage because there's no way that I can draw that and have that same, you know, whole ability to hold
right.
and whatever for as long and all that other stuff. Drawing concealed and in weird positions, very difficult to do.
Sure.
That. So anyway, I didn't do it, but I just wanted to see. And I mean, I could send the bear shaft at 50 yards and hit right with my. Now I shot the other day. I posted it up. I just like to see what people say.
Right.
You know, I just want to see what they're saying. I kind of pose it like I don't know what I'm talking about, but sometimes I do things. So just to see what the reaction is. I'm one of those guys that likes to test social media.
It's the troll in all of us.
But anyway, so I shot bear shaft here at 20. Boom, boom. You know, actually, I shot the bear shaft first, and then I shot the fletched arrow, and I hit my bear shaft, and you can see the fletched arrow is the one that's cocked up, not the bear shaft one in the picture. I don't know if anybody caught that or not, but I didn't explain it. And then I shot it at 40, and they were both here. Like the bear shaft was right where the dot was. Oh, excuse me, the fletched arrow was right where the dot was, and the bear shaft was to the left. And at 40 yards, but that's almost all facial contact right there.
Right.
And
I learned,
people don't understand that.
Like, right. I learned facial contact several years ago, probably in my first bow, when the guy that put the bow together, he goes, you know, you got to anchor in the same point every single time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And he put, you know, just a big old traditional disc, you know, kisser button on my string.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept pulling back corner of my mouth,
right.
Corner of my mouth, corner of my mouth. And I'm at the range, and I can't remember who it was that I was talking to. This is forever ago. And he looks at, as I'm drawing back, and he goes, you know, you haven't drawn back
the same
place every single time. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, the corner of your mouth is soft tissue.
Yeah.
I go, uh-huh. He goes, sometimes you're just a little further back, sometimes you're a little further forward. I'm like, holy cow. And at that point in time, you know, this is 25 years ago, I hadn't ever really thought about, you know, tip of the nose, because that's a pretty solid, you know, point.
Right.
So actually I had that kisser button. What I ended up doing was I take kisser button off a tooth.
Yep.
And he goes, that's actually brilliant, because your tooth isn't soft tissue. It's not going to move.
Nope.
It's not going to move every single time. And then I watch, you know, even in here shooting 3D, I watch these guys with big fluffy beards, and I see all the hair on the other side of the string. I'm going, there's no way that arrow is flying out the same way twice.
It's not.
And not that I'm anti-beard. I mean, I don't do a beard. I don't look good in it, and I don't look good anyhow. But I look at that.
No arguments here, Ron.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, I also wear a face mask. So if I did have facial hair, I'll have a face mask on. That's going to prevent all that contact.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't imagine trying to bow hunt with a big fluffy beard like, you know, the Duck Dynasty guys do.
Oh yeah.
I just feel like it would just get in the way. That's going to be another excuse for why I'll miss a shot or pull a shot or whatever. So it's the same. It's repetition of the same thing over again with all that hair in the way. You're just never going to know.
Yeah.
What if the wind's blowing?
That comes down to your practice again. Like, I tell people all the time, you want to practice wearing your backpack, the clothes, if you wear gloves. Like, I used to be in here all the time wearing gloves, and people would be looking at me like, what the fuck is this guy doing wearing gloves? It's 90 degrees outside and you're wearing these giant, like, because I knew I had, you know, like for South Dakota, I'm walking around these big ice gloves. Like, dude, it's freaking cold as shit.
But
like,
wearing the big fluffies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I get close to that hunt, a couple weeks prior to that, I'm shooting with those gloves. Whether it's, you know, 80 degrees here and, you know, 20 degrees there or whatever.
Right.
I do it because I know. I wear my big puffy jacket and I make sure. Now, I don't spend the same amount of time as I used to. Like, I would practice for weeks that way. Now, it's like, okay, that hunt's coming up. I'll do it for a week or two leading up to it. Not doing it all season long.
Right.
I did that up until really, really recently, like 2016. Again, my son was born. I started having a lot less time. I made more time at home trying to, you know.
Well, that's the five P's. The proper preparation prevents poor performance. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You gotta dress the role.
So yeah, and going back to the arrows and all that stuff. If you guys want, and I'm sure if you listen to the podcast, you heard me talk about it anyway. I have up on the blog. I have my vein testing, and pretty soon I'll have the broadhead testing up.
Oh, good.
I put my arrow build stuff up on YouTube and on the blog. How I approach them. I got, and the reason I really went down this rabbit hole for the vein testing and for the way I build my arrows. One, because I was looking for something upper echelon or next level, let's say,
right,
from my own personal. But I also did it because during my broadhead testing, I didn't want people to have too many things to pick at, like, oh, how do you know that the spine on that arrow and the weight and the blah, 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 yeah, you know,
I weighed all these. They're all 412 grains except for number 7 over here that's 414. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I literally, every single one of my arrows is one within 1 grain of each other.
See, that's awesome.
1 grain of each other. And so the variance is coming from the broadhead now. And that's what we're testing.
Right.
That's what we're testing.
Right.
Is this broadhead manufactured better than this broadhead?
Is it true that this broadhead can shoot like a field point?
Yeah.
Or can it not?
Exactly.
And is it true for any broadhead? Yeah.
So, I'm going to do a podcast specifically on that once all the results come out.
Awesome. Are you testing multiple broadheads?
Oh, got fucking 40 of them, bro.
Wow.
It's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. I'm having to do testing to figure out how I'm going to run my testing. It's driving me insane. I thought this was going to be, oh, yeah, no, I'll 5-6 days of da-da-da-da-da, I'm going to do this. Fuck no. I'm 3 months into this shit.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. I had planned on doing a little bit today after RTL here, but I don't know.
You almost want to use their draw mechanism.
Oh, we are.
Their,
the Hooter Shooter?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I used the Hooter Shooter for almost everything so
Hooter
far.
Shooter, that's right.
Yeah.
Take all the human.
Yep, we did it actually with the Coops first, and the Coops didn't. That's another shooting machine. I don't feel like that system is as good as the Hooter Shooter. It doesn't. It's supposed to be better,
right?
But it doesn't allow the bow to do what it does. And when we have it set up right in here indoors at 45 yards, we were getting same hole accuracy. I'm talking about like if you were shooting it with a 6.5 Creedmoor, same hole, like
right.
So badly that I had to change my thought process. We were trying to figure out, this is when I was trying to figure out what helical is better than the other. This is after we shot the different types of veins that we went, once I got to the vein that I liked, from which I came back to Blazer for myself, period.
Right.
And what I'm going to be using for the broadhead test, or what I am using for the broadhead test. There's no difference coming out of a shooting machine. There is no difference. Left helical, right helical.
Oh, really?
1 degree, 5 degree. Not at 45 yards.
Wow.
Not indoors.
Indoors, right.
When I took it outside and we were shooting 60, 80 yards, then there was a difference.
Sure.
So, you know,
there's
you got to be able to quantify things, and
exactly.
It's hard. It's hard to do it.
Exactly.
So, and then with me shooting, there is a difference. And it's all facial contact. It's all mechanics and all whatever.
Right. And repetition over again.
You know. Anyway, that's one of the things I've always said. People like this just brings up. It's a little off topic.
We always get off topic,
but it's like people talk about form.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can't tell you how many times guys come up to me and try to correct my form in the freaking.
Your feet are too far apart. You need to bring them closer together.
Yeah,
you need
this.
You need to angle a little here. And
I'm like, listen, dude.
Your hand comes straight back more. And
no disrespect. I'm like, no disrespect to you. Said, this is my take on form. Okay, your bow is a machine.
Right.
It's going to do the same thing every time.
Right.
As long as it's properly tuned. Right. The same thing every time. You have to be a machine.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you fucking put your leg up and touch your ass with your heel and jump around like a fucking retard.
If you can do it the exact same time.
If you could do it the same way.
Yep.
Every single time, then you're going to hit the same spot.
That's right.
Because your sight is adjusted to how you shoot.
No two shooters shoot the same.
Exactly.
Nobody has the exact same form.
it doesn't matter how perfect. Now, I will say this. The caveat to that is if you're a new shooter, it behooves you not to learn form because right. It gives you an easier base to go off of. Like
sure.
If you follow the technique of form, proper form, there go the air quotes again. If you follow proper form, it should be easier for you to consistently repeat that.
Absolutely.
Where if you don't have a system or in place or whatever, it's not going to be as easy. But I punch the trigger. I have a shit ton of facial contact.
Right.
I don't keep my hand open when I shoot. I grip the fucking shit out of
it. I grip the bow. Yep.
Okay. I mean,
do you pure follow through every single time or do you pull the bow away?
No, I do follow through good.
So yeah, I don't follow through at all. That's my biggest problem is pulling the bow away. And that's how being a lefty, holding with my right hand, pull the bow away, and my miss is to the right every damn time.
Yeah, I'll do that every once in a while. It'll happen. Right.
And it's so hard.
And it only happens when I'm tired, which is not usually, it doesn't happen when I'm hunting.
So hard to untrain yourself.
Yeah.
It's so hard to do. I switched that thumb release and it helped a bunch because then I stopped punching the trigger.
Yeah.
So now I'm just squeezing with my thumb and that helps a lot. But in the heat of the moment, it's just.
You could still punch with the thumb, in my opinion. But anyway.
My miss to the right comes back in the heat of the moment. So.
Yeah. See, in the heat of the moment, I'm actually a better shot than I am when I'm thinking about
That's where I'm going next. That's where I'm going next is I'm trying to get back to the buck fever, past that enough that I can think a little more clearly to think, all right, think the shot, you know, follow through with the shot, push away, pull back. I mean, that's where I'm going next. You've been hunting a long time.
Yeah,
you've been bow hunting a long time. People don't know or don't realize or don't remember. I've only been doing this about 6 years. So religiously. I mean, I used to hunt as a kid and all that, but I've really only been hardcore hunting, bow hunting for about 6 years now. So I'm just starting to come around to a lot of this stuff, a lot of this concept. So,
well, that's good because now, to be honest with you, it's easier to become, not easier, but it's better to become a bow hunter now than it did when in the 80s when I was a kid because the information's out there.
Right.
You had the learning curve is a lot shorter.
There's so much science behind it now.
I mean, look at Marlon Holden. I mean, he's a freaking beast. The guy only started hunting, 14 years ago, something like that?
Right.
I mean, beast. I mean, he has the confidence. You hand him a bow, he's going to go out. He's like, I will come home with a deer today.
Right.
Like, that's how confident he is. And I don't even have that confidence. And I've been freaking hunting since I'm literally five years old.
The guy's a mule deer guru, him and Chad down in Yuma. Holy cow. Yeah.
You know, I've been hunting since I'm 5 years old, and I started bow hunting at 13.
Right.
And I'm 44. It's 31 years of bow hunting.
That's awesome.
Right? That's good math.
There you go.
I didn't take out my iPhone for that.
There you go.
Okay. But
carry the one.
So it's like, you know, I don't know. I just... Right now is a really good time to become a bow hunter, I think. Like if you really want to get serious about it, because there's a lot of people helping. But the flip side of that is there's so many mouthpieces.
There's so much input.
So many mouthpieces from so many
and
different
so much
angles.
Misinformation that you can get. And so many old wives' tales on what's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's a matter of trying to filter through all that stuff. Exactly. Absolutely.
So
yeah,
that's my only cautionary tale. To say, you know,
and at the same time, you're talking about super tuning and talking about veins and talking and you know, perfecting the arrow.
Right.
And for a beginner to listen to that, absolutely should not be. A beginner just needs to work on form and loving it and enjoying it.
Right.
And then as they get more into it and decide, yes, this is something that I want, then I need to dial into the details. I need to listen to these podcasts. I need to pay attention to this super tuning. I need to put my arrow on take it to a shop like Arizona Archery Club where they can do the high speed camera, where they can find the imperfections.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So my last little tidbit to that and is that not too long ago, within the last 5 years, I was if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of guy.
Okay.
I use the same arrow, the same.
Right.
I didn't do all the tinkering that I'm doing now. And there's something to be said about that.
Sure.
Because it's confidence.
Yep. I know what I got. I know what I can do.
Right.
Yep.
Years ago, so I've been with Matthews for a long time. This is a good example. I had my Matthews LX. It was the first bow that I got from Matthews.
Right.
It was also my most loved bow.
Hmm.
And for about 5 or 6 years after that bow, every year I'd get a new bow. I'd shoot it for 3D. I'd shoot it for whatever. I'd do whatever I need to do with it.
You'd take the old one.
But I'd always take the LX hunting.
Right.
And there's something to be said about that. Like, right. There's something to be said about having confidence and having trust in your equipment.
Right.
And, like, I mean, I was a very successful hunter before I started getting into super this and wearing Sitka and wearing this and yep. doing that and blah, blah, yep. blah. I did very well in freaking Walmart cotton jeans and, you know, whatever. But
Mossy Oak and Realtree.
But I'll also say this. With, like, wearing Sitka, for instance. Okay, that was something I brought up, so I'll use an example. That gave me a new level of confidence, you know?
Especially when you see how it works.
I put it on. I feel like I'm putting on a uniform, or I'm putting on an armor, a suit of armor.
Right.
Ready? I'm ready to go do battle, yep. you know? It's let's go do battle. So once you've gotten to the point where you feel like you've done all you can with yourself, then you start building the confidence with, okay, now I know I got the most perfect arrow. Now I know I have right. the most perfectly broad broadheads and the most tuned bow and blah, blah, blah. So
there's a difference between if it ain't broke, don't fix it versus it ain't broke, but something might be better.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I've been at lately.
Right.
So, and I'm trying to look for the best that I can. And even then, I feel like there is a point of diminishing returns.
Sure.
So, like, even with the arrow build, I know I could go down a bunch more rabbit holes and try to get it even more perfect, but I'm not shooting X's for a living.
Sure. No. Nope.
You know?
Nope.
In reality, I'm looking to shoot a freaking pie plate.
Yep.
I mean, can I stack up a bunch in a dot, little dot, you know? Yeah, I can.
Yeah. Can you hit that pie plate at 94 yards with a weird angle, your feet uneven, and yeah, that's what you and I
exactly.
do. Right. So.
Exactly.
Cool.
Well, I mean, I got a lot more, but I think that's, we can sit here and talk
we
about
can
this and
talk
go around
about
circles.
All kinds of things. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't know if you got anything else to add.
No, just never stop hunting.
Yeah.
That's the last piece of advice that I think we're in control of is that walk back to the truck, hunt it.
Yeah.
Don't just walk. Don't just bounce through the desert. Never stop hunting. Can't. How many times has it happened to you where you're just, we're just going to cruise over to this next hillside. Halfway there, you jump up 3 deer that you didn't know was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it just.
Absolutely.
Never stop hunting. Everything, the entire time you're in the field, you're hunting. Oh, there's a buck. Okay, let's start working our way down there. You get 15 yards away from your spotting scope and two other bucks jump up.
Yep.
So, I mean, it happens. You just can't ever stop hunting. Take every step with a purpose. So that's the one thing I've learned most. I mean, even back when I was a kid, you know, taking a rifle for a walk,
mm-hmm.
I get guilty of that. And next thing I know, 40 yards in front of me, up jumps the deer I probably should have shot. So
right.
another missed opportunity. So yeah, that's the last thing I would say as far as what you can control. You can control your own attitude while you're out there. Just yeah. don't ever give up. Don't ever give up on it.
My closing thoughts and this was brought about by what you just said was one of the things that I attribute my success to is that I'm constantly hunting. I'm
right.
constantly putting myself in the hunting scenario. Like, even when I'm going, we talked about going to Brandon Avery shooting 3D, I literally will stalk that animal. And it's a foam target. I'll stalk that animal. I do a lot of the coyote hunting. I do a lot of the, you know,
right.
a lot of the off-season stuff that helps me stay helps to keep an edge on the broadhead, you know?
Sure.
Helps keep an edge on the knife. So just constantly think about that. Like when I'm in my house, I don't know, I've even developed this thing. Like I don't like loud noises. So when I wake up in the morning, I tiptoe around. I try to keep everybody asleep. And I try to do it as long as I do. I try to sneak up on my dogs. I try to, you know, like.
I can't do it anymore. He's going to have a heart attack. He's 13.
Yeah. So anyway.
But yeah, that's
funny. That's it. I mean, it's constantly being the mindset.
Yeah.
Because you want it to be as second nature as possible.
Yeah, no. When you're out there. Makes sense.
Well, awesome, man. Thank you for joining me on this. And
I appreciate the time. Always good to talk.
Hopefully that answered some questions and we didn't. Probably posed more questions than answered, but fine. Feel free to contact me, and
I'll post this up on Broadhead Nation once you publish it, and there'll be some conversations that under it, I'm sure.
So. Yeah, awesome,
very cool,
thanks, bro.
Yep, John.